Banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time, the Legion of Doom, dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat, the Super Friends. Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
And welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I am your host, Walter Duralia, and sitting beside me is the other host, Chris Owen.
I'm fiddling with my microphone. Apparently, I've loosened it somehow, and I don't know how to tighten it back up again.
No, it's good, Chris.
Don't you hate it when you have a loose microphone?
I hate when that happens. I really hate when that happens.
Unfortunately, these things do happen sometimes, but you know what? That is just merely one of the drawbacks of being a fantastic radio personality, I suppose.
Live radio,
live
Chris,
radio.
You
That's,
just go with
yeah,
it,
you
right?
really do.
Anything can happen at any time.
You never know what could happen. Anybody could walk in this door at any moment. And you know who has walked in our door right now is our special guest for the day. We have Mr. Scott Vanderplug, and he is here today. He is an avid comic book fan. He is a blogger on comicbookdaily.com. He has a blog. I don't even know if you want to call it a blog. It's more like his articles. I don't know. It's called Bound Together, and he's also a collector of original artwork. So we're going to talk a little bit about that maybe later on in the show, too. Scott, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
He's a man of few words.
Yes.
So let's hope.
But weighty.
But weighty, you know
but
what?
Weighty
he
words.
Only says what's necessary.
Yes.
All
right. Well, Scott, welcome. And we do every week. What we do first on the show is we discuss, today being Wednesday, new comics hit the stands today at your local comic book store. And we like to highlight a few things that people perhaps should watch for when they head into the shop today. But before we do that, Scott, we're going to give you the honor of reading our industry, our new this week sponsor.
New This Week is brought to you by The Negative Zone. Despite the name, it really is a great place to visit. Tours leaving daily from the Baxter Building.
Wow. That's great.
That was excellent. Well done. That was great. Yeah.
All right, guys. Hey, Walking Dead Volume 13 is on the shelves today at your local comic book store.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is actually I was at Chapters last night. Indigo last night. And they were offering some sort of sale on all the Walking Dead graphic novels. So clearly, it's not just the comic book stores that have caught on to this. This is something that's becoming a huge thing. And now with the TV series and into its, what, I think it's fourth episode. Now Scott is nodding his head saying, yes, it is the fourth episode.
Sorry, the radio is a new experience for me.
Yeah, okay. And so clearly... just because we haven't actually seen the episodes doesn't mean we're not a fan of it, it is a big thing.
Chris does apparently have all four episodes on his computer.
I would never download music
like a
pirate.
Download.
I would never do
he
something
them
like that.
Somewhere.
Yes.
And he's just waiting to watch them. That's all.
I have one episode that was lent to me somehow. I don't know how that person got it, but you know, I don't want to say anything. But and unfortunately, I still have yet to watch it.
Well, here's the thing with
Here's
the thing. Walking Dead. We have Scott here, who is a collector of bound editions, graphic novels, that whole thing. Walking Dead is one of those titles that seems to sell better as a collected edition,
yes.
Than the monthlies.
Yes,
so, I know our store. I think I may be off a bit, but I think we got like 40 copies just for today. Then we'll have to reorder.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
So I don't think we're ordering 40 copies of each Walking
Dead. The individual comic.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but though, the thing I don't understand, I guess, is if it's a monthly serialized thing,
yeah.
How can they wait six? Like, how do you wait 6 months before you want to read the next one?
Well, you know what? I think part of it is you buy the graphic novel and you get a really good dose of whatever graphic novel it happens to be. So you're kind of satisfied for a little while, and then of course you have to wait another 6 or 7 months or 8 months or whatever it is until the next one comes out. I know that I used to do the same thing with the Preacher graphic novels. I didn't know what was happening in the monthlies because they were sort of a little bit too far ahead. But I was more than happy to just read the story arcs that were happening in the Preacher arcs in the graphic novels. And I mean that's the way they're done these days. They're all done in like little 6 or 7 issue story arcs, right? So that's sort of it makes it easier on the reader. But really, the person we should be talking to about graphic novels here is with us in the studio right now, and that is of course Mr. Scott Vanderplug.
All right, Scott, so why, if you're a fan, why wouldn't you want to go out next month and buy that monthly? Like, is it just a condition that guys that read collecteds have?
Well, if you're a fan of any author, They write a book, you wait for the next book to come out, then you read the next book. Only comic book fans are used to serialized fiction where there's something appearing every month. If you're coming from the outside world of fiction, then you're used to waiting a year or 2 years or 3 years for the next item to appear. So these are fans coming in from the TV series, and they're being exposed to this, and they're thinking, great, I've picked it up, I've read it, and now they're going to wait for the next one.
Okay, now here's a good point. Do you think that people who are reading Walking Dead, are they new comic book fans, or are they a lot of people that are just sort of comic book fans who are used to the graphic novel format, and then therefore just sort of going along with that?
I think, well, speaking from our store, definitely Walking Dead had a great following amongst the comic book community. But
right.
It's one of those, Alan Moore movie that they did? The Watchmen.
Watchmen, yeah.
It's one of those things where that book.
A little comic known as Watchmen.
Yeah. But no, my point is, it was always a graphic novel that sold well. It's one of those evergreens that a good store will always stock.
For sure.
But it just tripled the volume as that movie approached. And
right now, even though
Walking Dead was a great success before,
it's
double that now.
Right,
because
right.
we're getting the old diehards, but now we're getting just as many new people, from the TV series,
coming in and
doing that.
Well, very good. Well, for all those that are interested in the new Walking Dead series, I would highly recommend going out and checking it out, and certainly picking up volume number 13.
Yes. All right.
Your local
also
store.
New in your local comic shop today. Amazing Spider-Man number 649.
Yes.
Dan Slott writing and. Umberto Ramos. Doing the now. This is a new change of direction for Spidey again.
But you know what? I'm actually okay with this because I'm a big fan of Dan Slott, and I'm not a huge fan of Umberto Ramos's artwork. He has a kind of a bit of a cartoony style to him that I think it appeals to a lot of people. But I think with this fresh take on Spider-Man, I think it's going to be a good take especially for Dan Slott's writing. Dan Slott is sort of a quirky little bit of a writer. I shouldn't say little. I have no idea what the guy looks like, but he is a quirky writer, and he invents cool characters and cool concepts. One of the first times I ever read anything by him was the Batman Arkham Asylum Living Hell graphic novel, or it was a miniseries that he did. And one of the coolest characters that I thought he came up with was a character called Humpty Dumpty, who would kill people and then try to put them back together again, kind of a la Frankenstein kind of thing, right? And so I thought he comes up with really interesting concepts, and I think he's a great writer for Spider-Man, which has a bit of a quirky edge to it, as well as what like a kind of like a light and fun kind of style. And I think, as I said before, Umberto Ramos's artwork will match that.
All right, Scott, do you read Spider-Man? No, have you read Spider-Man?
Sure, I've heard of the character. Thank you.
No, I mean, have you read the monthly? Have you ever been do you read? Okay, let me put it in another way. Do you read the graphic novels of Spider-Man?
Yes, I do. I do not read any monthly comics anymore. I wait for the collected editions.
Here's a guy that is so hardcore about graphic novels, he doesn't even read the regular comic editions anymore. He just reads nothing but graphic novels.
You know what? I mean, a lot of guys are going that way. So
absolutely, hey, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying,
right, not that there's anything wrong with that, Scott. All right, we're gonna move it along. Also, at your local comic shop today, and probably your better local comic shop, should be carrying Green Lantern Omnibus. This is a huge 640-page hardcover, $75 U.S. thing that reprints a lot of the old Silver Age Green Lantern stories. So it collects Showcase 22 to 24,
right,
which was the reintroduction.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like the first appearance of the Hal Jordan Green Lantern, right?
But the character, though.
It really is the first appearance of the Hal. It's the first appearance of Hal Jordan, right? Even though the character came out, like the character of Green Lantern,
right,
which was Alan Scott before, which was the Golden Age one. So this is the new Silver Age one. This is the one that really mattered for what we're talking about, right?
Okay, but it's the reintroduction of the Green Lantern character as being acted out by a new person.
Sure, but right, okay. I guess.
All right.
Anyways.
It also reprints Green Lantern from the Silver Age, number 1 to 21, and it has a whole bunch of other little features and little added bonuses. And we have Scott here, and I wanted to ask Scott, these omnibuses, these absolutes, these you're paying a lot more in your, you know, I guess, connoisseurness of these things.
Connoisseurness?
Yes. Do you get value for the extra money you're putting with the extra, I don't know, editor's notes or writer's notes? Or,
well, you're addressing a couple different segments here. The omnibus is generally a regular sized comic format, sort of the 7.5 by 10, that is collecting a large group of issues together in one. So you're getting some value here. The issues you mentioned previously would have been collected in the DC archives at about $55 a shot. So that would have been the first three Green Lantern DC archives. You got about $150 worth of previously collected material now for $75 US.
Right.
So it's a good, I mean, it's a good value if it's an introduction to the new character, to the character.
And I mean, yeah, I mean, and also let's not forget that if you wanted to go out and buy those actual issues per issue, they're going to cost you a lot more than $75.
Right. I love the way how Scott politely told me, I don't know what the hell I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
you know, he's very tactful that way. Yeah.
I
didn't want to bring that up, but, you know, I thought it was very, very nice of Scott.
Well, I'm bringing it up.
Scott, you know what? You can more than welcome to tell him that he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Anytime you feel the need. Okay, guys, we have a lot of industry news today, so we're going to cut new this week right there. Obviously, today being Wednesday, please head out to your local comic shop, support your local comic shop, and check out the new this week rack.
And you know what? Just because we haven't played it in a long time, and I feel like we're going a little bit old school tonight. I don't know. I just get this feeling. So, yeah, I figure I'd kick it old school with one of my favorites. And I know you haven't heard it for a while. And here's, of course, the Aquaman song.
Aquaman. King of the sea, where the danger is, that's where he'll be, always defending you, yeah, you and me. Aquaman, he can swim faster than the fastest thing in the sea or on the land. With Mira, his beautiful queen beside him, he'll fight with all his might. You can always depend on mankind's truest friend, Aquaman. Thank you.
meeting. You, yeah, you and me. Aquaman, he can swim faster than the fastest thing in the sea or on the land. With Mera, his beautiful queen, beside him, he'll fight like dynamite till the end. Oh, you can always depend on mankind's truest friend, Aquaman.
Wow, Chris, you know, that never grows old. And you know, I enjoyed that one extra more today because as soon as it started, I just had a picture of our producer, Anthony Falcone, cringing.
Yeah, cringing. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say the same thing.
All right, listen, a great segue into industry news. And by the way, Scott.
I'm not really sure how that's a segue, but you know, whatever.
This week's industry news is brought to you by Black Bolt Throat Lozenges. When your throat is so sore that the slightest whisper feels like the biggest scream, try Black Bolt Throat Lozenges for inhumanly fast relief.
Inhumanly.
Inhumanly.
Inhumanly. Well, you know what? That's a really great segue into I've got a little tidbit here. I know it's kind of industry news, but not really. It's got nothing to do with particularly comics. However, part of the radio industry is. Did you know? As a matter of fact, that CFMU was awarded Radio Station of the Year at this weekend's Hamilton Music Industry Awards for 2010.
Good for them. Yeah. I mean, us. Good for us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure that our talk radio show had a lot to do with their winning this award.
You know what? It put them over the top.
Absolutely.
You know it
absolutely.
Did.
Well, you know what? You know, it could have done is perhaps the music from Aquaman.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Wow. I mean, really, when you think about it, where else are you ever going to hear that song on the radio?
Right.
Yeah, hey, absolutely, you know what?
Right.
Hey.
You know what? Great news for CFMU. You know, obviously the McMaster radio station. You know, a bunch of volunteers, basically.
That's right. Yeah.
Have a love for what they're doing, and you know, it's great to be recognized.
Absolutely.
So kudos to everyone.
Yes. Way to go, CFMU. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Listen. Getting into industry news, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Spider-Man. So now the whole – remember you and I talked about, Chris, last year, the Spider-Man musical on Broadway?
Yes. Yes. No, isn't that the one that Bono was writing music
right.
for at one point? Yeah.
Bono was writing – is it Bono or Bono?
I think it's Bono, isn't it? Scott, what do you – let's wait. Wait.
I would say Bono.
Bono. Okay,
Bono.
Let's say Bono.
So it's Bozo, but it's Bono.
It's not like pro bono. It's not like, you know, and certainly it's not like Sonny and Bono and Cher.
Okay, Chris. Anyways, marketing for the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, the $60 million Broadway musical, is kicking into high gear, apparently. They have a big spread on the show in the new December Vogue magazine.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting.
They have some deal with the Sci-Fi Network to promote... you know, through commercials and little snippets and stuff like that, the show. And I guess this is now, it's going to cost them $1 million a week to run the show.
Wow.
And they're out there now selling it because it's supposed to go, people are supposed to start going in January, apparently.
Hold on. So it's going to cost $1 million a week to run it. What do you mean by
like
run
production,
it?
Like production. Production costs.
Wow.
Costs, you know, with actors, with stagehands, with everything.
All that stuff.
Everything.
$1 million.
And that's like a lot of tickets they have to sell.
It's
already the most expensive Broadway musical ever staged.
Holy cow. So that's going to out... You know, out... bid, not bid, but out production value. Like, you know, Cats.
Cats, man.
Cats, yeah.
Yeah. It, everything.
Wow.
You know, Joseph and the amazing...
Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Or even Miss Saigon.
Yeah, everything. Yeah.
I got an idea. Why don't we just start mentioning all the musicals we can think of?
Fiddler on the Roof. Fiddler
on the Roof.
Well, you know, if I were a rich man, hey, see what
that
I did
one,
there?
What's that one that you take your date on? The one, the Phantom of
Phantom
the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera, yes. Or Les Mis.
Les Mis.
Les Mis, yeah. Well, okay, if you can think of any other musicals that we haven't mentioned that have come out in the last 5 years, other than perhaps the, you know, the Evil Dead, the musical, you know, you're more than welcome to email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or Walt at bigbcomics.com, or you're also more than welcome to email us through the Comic Book Daily website. I'm getting all these shrugs here. Apparently, I'm not saying this right.
Being a representative of the Comic Book Daily website, appearing on your radio show today,
yes,
we would like people to post comments on the website about today's show.
That's how it works.
That's what you want us to do. Sorry, okay.
Now, I'm thinking that, you know, just these commercials isn't going to be enough, guys. You know, these commercials is not going to be enough.
No, you're absolutely right. It's probably not going to be enough.
All right. Well, you know.
Well, you know, it's the commercials themselves. I mean, really, you have to get lots of different people to come in and go to the show and all kinds of stuff.
All right, then. Well, we have like a really big pregnant pause here.
I don't know why these guys are not talking here, but they're having issues with what they're saying.
Our apologies. I thought the recorder had stopped. My apologies. All right. Woo.
Oh goodness,
Scott, what you're witnessing is professionalism.
That's, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Anyway,
listen, I don't think that that's going to be enough anyway, this promotion. These guys are going to have to go into high gear and start making some you know, lunch boxes. They're going to start...
Hey, Mom, can I get my Spider-Man the Musical lunchbox?
Well, think about it. If they're just relying on people coming to New York and paying for tickets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is big.
Yeah.
They need to kind of make money from this outside of the actual studio.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have no idea how much the tickets are going to cost, but they can't price themselves out of market, right? I mean,
right.
They have to make sure that people are actually going to want to see it.
Yeah.
But, you know, having said that, I mean, I'm sure the startup costs are phenomenal, but, I mean, it's one of those graduated things where I'm sure by the end of the show, the costs aren't going to be as high.
Yeah, but like Broadway, right? You want to have a long run. If they have a long run and if it's popular, I'm sure they're going to be fine. But if
sure.
it's like, 2 years or 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
And,
it has to be like a 7-year thing or something
right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah,
and it has
sure.
to come to Toronto.
Yes.
Can you imagine? Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that the costumes had to be redesigned. Which, for a character that's been around 60 years, it
really?
Seems like a striking expense.
Actually, I didn't know that. They're redesigning the costumes for characters that have been around for, like you say, like,
well,
forever?
Well, here's the great cash grab about this thing. So some guy comes into his, no.
Yeah.
This is the stage.
Oh, boy.
You got to have glitz. You got to have, you know.
Glitter.
Glitter. So I'm going to redesign all. That's Stan Lee, by the way, talking about
that's
redesigning
terrible
all,
Stan
all
Lee
the costumes. But the thing is that somebody sold somebody the fact that
the idea.
This is a stage performance. It has to look different, right?
Yeah.
And like Scott said, you know, that's probably an error too, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm just getting right now. I just kind of had a picture of Spider-Man walking around in the front of the stage and like going up to people and trying to do wrestling matches with like the Hobgoblin or Venom or something. It sounds terrible.
Right.
It just it just sounds terrible.
You know what? We're gonna give it a shot. All right, now let's move on. I want to talk about Detective Comics number 27.
Yes.
The first appearance of Batman.
Yes.
1939 comics sold last week at Heritage Auctions. Sorry, a few days ago, actually. Heritage Auctions for $492,000.
Cool. That's insane. $492,000.
400, that's half a mil.
Yeah.
And this comic was graded a 7.0 out of 10.
Well, you know what? As soon as you said that, I was going to say, wasn't there one graded like an 8 or an 8.5 or something like that not too long ago that was sold for just under $1 million?
Yeah, the 8.0 sold for $1 million.
Right, okay.
And the 7.0, which is now, sold for $500,000.
So that's crazy that half a grade, really, I mean, that's...
That would be a full grade.
Sorry, full grade.
Yeah.
Sorry,
that's okay.
Sorry, I thought you said 7.5.
Right.
A full grade. I mean, really, that's that $500,000. Like, what if a guy was just having a bad day?
Yeah, you know what?
Like, my girlfriend broke up with me this morning, you know.
I'm giving this a 7.
I'm giving this guy a 7. Yeah. Or, you know, hey, you know what? I just won $10 on a lottery ticket. Yeah. Ah, you know, I'll give this guy a full 8.
I'll give this guy 8.
Yeah.
You're right. Or not that this happens. Oh, yeah, this is one of our better customers sent this book down.
Yeah, let's
we'll give
that.
These guys an 8.
Let's hope that never happens.
Of course it doesn't. Now, but you are right. And I think what's at play here, though, is this normally, this increment would not happen to, let's say, the first Fantastic Four or the first Spider-Man.
Right.
Because there are higher grades than eight.
Right.
So this isn't about a seven versus an eight. I believe, I could be wrong, I believe the 8-0 detective is the highest graded copy.
Right.
So it's irrelevant. It's just the highest copy. It's the best known copy.
Sure.
And it's going to get a large, large amount more than, let's say, the copies below it.
Right. Sure, okay.
Whereas like a seven versus an eight of the first Spider-Man, you know, the seven may get, I don't know, let's say 80% of the
eight. It's not going to double the price.
No, it's not going to double the price. But I think what was at play there is that detective had, it was the best one around.
So it got
the $1 million. But still, $500,000, great story. The original owner, an 84-year-old gentleman, Robert Irwin.
Yes.
Paid a dime for it off the newsstand.
Yeah, and he put it aside for a number of years, and then he decided he would shell it out of his shoebox kind of thing. And he knew he had a comic in his like a good comic in his hands, because I remember years ago he thought about selling it, and then his wife dissuaded him from doing that, and then now it's worth $500,000.
Excellent. Yeah. That's great news. All right, let's move on. Lots of industry news. I want to talk about Warner Brothers.
Oh yeah,
they want to reboot the Buffy franchise in a movie.
Oh boy. Now, and that is, for those of you in the know, that is of course how the Buffy franchise started. It was started with a movie.
Right. It was started with a movie, and it was like more of a comedy type of movie.
Yep.
And then Joss Whedon took it to TV and made it darker and made it kind of the cult.
Well, yeah, Joss Whedon created the character even for the movie, but I guess the producers and the sort of the people, the production staff and the, you know, all those people kind of took it over and made it into something that he hadn't quite envisioned. But then when it was made into a TV series, he kind of brought it back to what he thought it should be.
Right. So, but Joss Whedon didn't own the rights to the Buffy. The Buffy movie, the original 92 movie, was paid for by some guy's name, Kaz Kazooie.
Oh, okay.
And his wife. And so they're the ones that sold the rights to the Buffy for Warner Brothers to make this movie.
Oh, now, I didn't know that. Okay.
Now, the interesting thing is because Joss Whedon made the characters like Angel and all the other
right.
They can't use any of those characters.
Oh, okay,
so they're,
right.
They're basically going to do that initial Buffy type of movie,
right?
And you know, in a way, they're a little bit not a little bit. In a way, they're smart in a sense that they're relying on the Buffy brand,
just the name, yeah,
to get them. Even though they're not going to make a movie, which I think most of the Buffy fans will be expecting to go see with all the characters that Joss Whedon developed.
So now, I'm a little confused here now, which happens often. Does just Joss Whedon have anything to do with this movie coming out here? Or do we know?
No. And actually, Joss Whedon he's a little ticked.
Oh, sure.
That this is going. His quote was, or not a quote, but his thing was that he hates it when people feed off the carcasses of beloved stories from our youth.
Wow, that's right. Some harsh words.
You know, who's Joss Whedon to say that, though? Like, I mean, in other words, he's saying,
he created Buffy.
Hey, nobody can make money off this thing except me. The nerve of somebody trying to make money off of Buffy, right?
Yeah.
Because they're allowed to.
Well, he's probably making money off the guy that created comic books, though, right? Charlie Gaines. So, you know, really, is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like this type of thing goes on.
Yeah, for sure.
Every
all
day,
the time.
All the time, wherever you turn, people are making money off of recreating something that somebody else has done at a certain point. And I don't see Joss Whedon stepping in and saying this is sacrilege.
No. But I'm sure, you know, it's not the first time it's happened, and it will happen again.
No. But, you know, the best thing that could happen is for this movie to be a really good movie. Just kind of, hey, there you go.
Right? Anybody can make this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
So
they could probably guarantee success if they brought Donald Sutherland back.
Donald Sutherland, you mean he was in
he was in the first movie.
Oh, right.
And Christy Swanson.
Right.
Yes.
Or you know what they can do though? They can get, they can ask Kiefer.
I think it make it into like a 24 / Buffy movie.
Right. They can ask you. Listen, your old man is busy.
Your old man.
Why don't you come in and step in for him? But that's good. Now, I'm glad. I like this, and I hope the movie works. All right. Great story here, guys. I'm reading this, and it's something about the Seattle Police Department almost shooting a superhero. So in Seattle, apparently there's the real-life superheroes organization.
What the what's, who's a was it?
Real-life superheroes. The Rain City superhero movement includes the likes of Thorn, Buster Doe. I thought he was a boxer that fought.
I loved watching Buster Doe Buster when he fought Doe. Against Buster
Douglas.
Yeah,
he went 15 rounds with the Green Reaper, Gemini, No Name, Catastrophe.
No Name.
Yeah, Thunder 88.
I love that name.
Phoenix Jones and the Guardian of Seattle.
Phoenix Jones.
Right. And they're all masked. They all carry tasers.
There's a reason for that, yeah. I'm sure.
Apparently, they all carry tasers. They all carry nightsticks and pepper spray.
Okay.
But they're not allowed to carry guns, obviously.
Okay, so hold on. So let me get this straight. Is this like a group of like vigilante-type people who are going around a city and like actually trying to fight crime? Is that what you're saying?
This is what it looks like. I think it's a group of people that have watched Kick-Ass too many times.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like for sure.
And
I didn't think anybody watched Kick-Ass.
Oh, hey, Kick-Ass.
It did well.
Apparently, people saw Kick-Ass and they liked it.
Yeah.
Right? I think Comic Book Daily's David Deep saw it and he wrote a good review on it on the site. But you know what I think? Remember New York back in the 70s? They had those...
Guardian Angels.
Guardian Angels.
See, I knew where you're going with that.
Right. Yeah. So these guys are... A mix between Guardian Angels
and wannabe superheroes
and wannabe kick-ass guys.
Yeah, right. For sure. But you know what? It sounds to me like they're actually doing a public service, which I'm quite all right with. And you know what? It sounds like what they've decided is that let's have some fun with this. Let's pretend we're superheroes because we're doing something good for the society.
See, Chris, this is where you and I are different. I'm a little more cynical. I think that these guys have some sort of movie deal in mind. I think that these guys are going out there, getting in the news.
Yeah,
they're having some sort of organization. Apparently, they're having some sort of Seattle film crew following them around. It's like what's the Steven Seagal sheriff? You know, where the cameras following around arresting.
This is just one old lady stabbing away from a great movie deal. Really.
Like an old lady stabbing one of the superheroes?
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And then you know, and all of a sudden there's going to be a movie deal because it's going to be all about how they tried to do this great service and then it went wrong and then the breakdown of society because of it and all that. Yeah, I can see a lot of movie works here.
Right. Anybody, if it succeeds, then you can have a proliferation to other markets.
Yeah, and then we have lots of guests to have on the show.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I see. Like, if it does proliferate.
I can't wait to have No Name person or something like that on our show.
Well, we'd have like a whole Toronto-based crew, I think.
Could we have CN Tower Boy?
CN Tower Man. You know, though, if it does get popular, I can see like a movement toward a registration act for these guys.
What a great comic book concept.
See?
There you go. Nice.
But I have a feeling half of the guys won't want to do could be trouble.
And then the other half will. And then there could be trouble. Maybe fights or something. Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, anyway, it's a great story. Visit HTTP /news.reallifesuperheroes.org.
I've never heard anybody ever read a website
like
that.
You're some sort of techno wizard.
I am good. I know.
Okay, you know what? I actually have a bit of industry news that I have been holding back on you guys. Uh-oh. Did you know that recently in the news, I think it was yesterday, it was put on that thing called the interweb, that a lot – remember those – those glasses you would get from like Coca-Cola or from like say Burger King, like Wizard of Oz glasses or some sort of superhero glasses from like the 70s and stuff like that. Well, it turns out that they've been doing tests on them now, and it turns out they're chock full of lead and cadmium, and they're very dangerous to your health. So if you're actually using them still, you might not want to use them anymore because they're actually quite dangerous. And of course, if apparently even if you use them as little as 20 times, the lead and or cadmium that is in the paint that they use to make these characters on the glasses gets on your fingers, and then if you're touching, eating chips or something like that, you know, while you're drinking them, it can be really unhealthy for you.
This is a public service announcement.
Well, I'm just
Chris
saying, you know,
because
remember, there's a lot of these were Warner Brothers glasses that were still being sold recently.
Right.
Now, having said that, because I actually do collect some of these the more recent glasses that are produced by the Tune Tumblers that are available mainly only in the States.
I think you've just poured me a drink in one of them.
The Tune Tumblers apparently are safe, but you know what? Whatever you're drinking out of, you might want to just check a website just to make sure, just for those of you who are still out there using them. Oh.
Sorry, well, McDonald's had issued Shrek 3 glasses, and this all started with them. They
That's right.
recalled the entire
That's right,
promotion.
Like 3 million glasses or something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, make them right the first time, guys, and there's no issues.
Yeah. All apparently right. The worst one was the Tin Man. Apparently it's had lots of lead in them.
A lot of tin.
A lot of tin.
Okay. All right, well, on that really dour note... but an important piece of information,
you know,
I understand.
I think people should know these things.
Public service announcement. Thank you. Now, I want to talk about toys. Every year, the top 10 toys for boys list is compiled by the National Retailers Federation. And I checked out the top 10 list this year. Because I got two boys, so you know I'm checking it out. And of course, perennial favorites, video games.
Oh, right, yeah.
And Lego.
Oh, Lego is always the biggest seller, right?
Right.
I mean, people love Lego. They've loved it for 30 years now. I mean, even when I was a kid, Lego was like the big thing for me. And of course, now everybody's got all the different kinds of Bionicle and Star Wars Lego and Raiders of the Lost Ark Lego and or Indiana Jones and Batman and all kinds of cool stuff.
Now, the interesting thing is, of the top 10, only one comic property cracked the top 10. And that is Iron Man-related toys.
Well,
so, apparently Iron
Man-related
really? Toys are a big item this year, according to this National Retailers Federation survey. And none of the other toys, you know, have anything. And I won't say they're not comic-related. No, you know what? Scott's pointing out to me that, you know, Transformers is there. But, of course, Transformers was a toy first. It was adapted into comics. But I guess, you know, even video games, right,
well,
could have comic.
Yeah, but I mean, I understand what you're saying, is that were they a comic first and then later adapted into a toy?
Yeah, like a comic book property that is being made into a
now,
toy line that's doing well.
I'm not surprised that you know, Iron Man beat out, say, any of the other Marvel characters, because really there's nothing that's been going on with Spider-Man or the Hulk or anything like that recently. I am a little surprised that there's none of the other DC stuff is on there, especially Batman, which seems to have endless bat merchandising going on, and or any like the Teen Titans or anything like that. I'm kind of surprised that there's nothing else from DC in the top 10, but maybe this is a wake-up call for DC.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think, like you said, though, I think it's, you know, Iron Man was a big hit this year.
Yeah.
And Marvel did something right with the merchandising of the toy lines.
I think
you have to have something, you know, next year you'd think Thor or Captain America or something like that would be. Even though I don't have a feeling that Thor, I mean, what could you sell a kid? I can just see selling a kid a big hammer.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
hey,
hold on.
Two brothers. Here you go, son.
Foam hammer is the way to go. Absolutely.
Foam hammer, foam hammer. Yeah.
I think next year, hands down, the it's going to be Green Lantern.
Green Lantern will be big. But you know what? I have to say, hey, why not have like a Thor helmet, right, with the little wings on the top and little skull type metal thing,
right, and have like foam inside it so you can get hit with the hammer.
Exactly.
Right.
See, now you're now you know what? You're a brilliant
right,
man.
Right. All right.
Excellent idea.
Well, the kids are excited people. So head out into your non-local comic shop this year and pick up some Iron Man toys. Support the comic book aspect of toys, please, if you can.
All right, sounds good.
All right. I have more industry news.
More industry news.
I have one more.
Okay, yep.
Our new producer, Scott, is pointing at it to me. And
I like the fact that we really do need a producer.
Somebody's got to take
somebody's
charge.
Somebody's got to do these things, yeah.
Right. Hey, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You ever heard
yes,
of those guys?
TMNT, I've heard
TMNT.
Of it, yeah.
Eastman Kodak did those. I did that wrong. Kevin Eastman.
And Peter Laird, yeah.
Peter Laird. Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. Anyway, the co-creator Kevin Eastman is selling all his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff.
Like his artwork and comics?
His everything. It's on eBay right now. It's got, like, you know, if there were cereal boxes, there were video games, dispensers, towels, linens, cameras.
So it's not like comics and art. It's probably like all, like, you know, if you got a towel or something.
Everything.
Yeah, okay.
Everything. Everything that was ever licensed or produced in the TMNT name.
Right. Video games and...
Yeah. He basically is grouping... He saved all that. He's grouping it all together, and he's putting it all up on eBay. There's even original Jim Henson's... Jim Henson Studio, they made the Leonardo costume for the movie.
Oh, right.
That's up.
Cool.
Videotape archives from all the cartoons, that's up. He's even willing to sign 250 items of your choice.
Wow, that's cool.
So you pick the 250 items, and he will sign. And he will include a head sketch.
A head sketch?
Yes.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, just one head sketch.
250, come on.
250 head sketches?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I think it meant like one.
No. And this is the part that I found funny. I think it's kind of a cool event.
Yeah.
The part that I found funny is he's starting the bidding at just $50K. But if you look at the auction as of last night when I looked.
It's at $50K?
It's at like $53K, reserve not met.
Oh, well, that's strange. Well, then why, if he says you're starting at $50K,
why don't
then...
you start it at just $1?
Yeah, you might as well. Really.
Right? Like, I mean, it's... just $50K, and then somebody bids
$50K.
No.
He means business. He wants at least $50,000 or so.
But
right?
but $50,000 isn't enough.
No, clearly, I know.
Right? So what's he all about? Like, what's the minimum?
What's the point of starting a minimum at $50,000? I agree.
I don't know. The thing, though, again, going back, is didn't these guys sell to Nickelodeon for $60 million?
I mean, didn't they renew a contract or something like that for $60 million? Like, I'm sure they've got plenty of money, so why is he selling all this stuff? Is this a cash grab, or is this just, hey, like, you know what, I want to get rid of my warehouse? And, you know, I could see if he was going to, like, you know, at least donate the money to charity or something like that, but all reasons point to not doing that. So.
Well, I mean, if he did that, he would give it to Nickelodeon to do something in terms of a display or a little museum or something for this stuff.
The TMNT Museum.
But like, when I read on the initial deal, it said Mirage Group owned the bulk of the rights to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which they sold to Nickelodeon. And I just assumed that Eastman, you know, was... a principal
as far as I knew, I thought Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird were like the principal owners of Mirage.
Right.
But
right.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this maybe something has changed.
So, very cool item up on eBay. I think there's like 3 or 4 days left in this. So, people, you still have time to bid. And that is up on eBay. I think you just type in what do you call those things when you type in, Scott?
A search engine?
Search words. String.
Search words.
Right.
Search a word. You have to circle it.
There's
with your
a
pen.
Little bar on your eBay thing. You
and
type
you,
in
and
what
you circle
you're
around,
for,
yeah.
And you'll find that. And we'll see where it is. Next week, we will report the final sales figure.
How the sale went. Yes, right. Absolutely. Well, you know what? Let's just get away from all this talk of industry news for a minute, and let's get back to a topic we've already mentioned a few times tonight. That is, of course, our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
His amazing friends, Iceman and Firestar. amazing friend.
All right, well, that brings us now to the next topic of our show. And our next segment is, of course, brought to you by Stiltman Stilts. Want to impress your friends and family? Show off your sexy stilt skills at parties and weddings. Stilts are cool. No, really. I promise. Stilts. Stilts, everybody. Stilts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those guys are going to sell
those
a lot of stilts.
Stilt guys.
Yeah.
All right, have we gotten paid for any of our sponsorships yet?
I haven't checked with Anthony, but I believe he's on vacation now in the Bahamas, but he told me no.
Interesting. All right.
All right. That brings us to the feature of the show, Chris, where we have Scott Vanderplug with us. Scott, of course, the driving force behind Comic Book Daily.
Yes.
Lately, anyway.
lately.
And of course, a collector of art. I know, Chris, that you're a collector of
art. Yes.
And,
in fact, I think I got Scott interested in collecting an artwork.
Is that right?
Well,
how'd that happen?
I like to think that I had at least a hand in it. I don't know if I got him interested, but I think I kind of molded him in my image. No, seriously, Scott, what did get you interested in collecting artwork?
It was, in fact, you. You and I have a long history together.
Yep.
I was in high school, and I applied for a job at Silver Snail, and I did not get the job.
Because
I went in to see who got it. It was Chris Owen. Bitter still. But, yeah, you had been attending conventions and getting sketches, and I was a lifelong comic collector and looking for something new to spend money on because I was single and still had money. And the opportunity provided to go to a show and to pick up some original artwork. And from that point, I was hooked and hit the eBay.
Now, what was your – do you still have the first piece that you bought, the first original artwork? Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, good question. I was at a show, one of the first Paradise Comic Cons, and I had gone to see Paul Ravosch because I'm a big Mr. X fan, even though he didn't actually do much artwork. He was late for the show, and Tony Harris was beside him, and Tony Harris had a Legends of the DC Universe cover painting. It was of the Atom, and I remember it was $400. And that's where I started off, and from then on, it's been great.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that, you know, Scott and I were talking earlier today about how, you know, when we first started getting interested in collecting artwork. I mean, I've been doing it a little bit longer than Scott has, but, you know, collecting artwork years ago was somewhat affordable for somebody who just wanted to sort of dabble in it. Now it seems like, you know, you really have to be kind of serious about collecting artwork because the prices have gone so high. Don't you agree, Scott?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just that first piece that I picked up, it was a cover, and that was it. I thought that was a huge amount of money for something, for a painted cover. And now, absolutely, you can't even get a page for that price.
Yeah,
anymore.
I mean, you said you paid $400 for a painted cover.
That's right, Tony Harris.
Yeah,
cover.
And you probably wouldn't be able to get a painted cover for anything less than a couple $1,000 now, right? So, I mean, you know, I mean, great for you because you clearly you lucked in on as a collector, as a piece of investment. But you know what? For anybody that wants to get involved in collecting artwork now, it's a very costly industry to get involved in.
So what's a good approach then? So let's say I want to start collecting art. You just kind of go. Is a good approach just sketches, like $50 sketches?
I mean, it depends. It depends what you're looking for. I would say it depends what you're looking for. First of all, you know, are you looking for something that of your favorite character? Are you looking for something that you want to invest in? I mean, obviously, the higher profile artists are the ones that you're going to want to. You're probably going to want to invest in. Now, having said that, some of the higher profile artists are already costing a lot of money to get sketches from. So I don't know what your return on it's going to be like if you want to go at it strictly for investment. I think. What do you think, Scott?
If it's a hobby, it's very difficult to approach any hobby, something passion that you're passionate about that you love as an only in a source of investment. If you're collecting, if you want to start collecting artwork, then you're going to find a character that you enjoy or an artist that you enjoy, and you're going to pick up something. When you started collecting sketches, and when I first went to the first comic conventions I went to, it was the pages that attracted me. The prices were lower than sketches at the time for a lot of pages, especially from bigger name artists. I could pick up a page, but I couldn't afford a sketch.
Yeah.
But now, unfortunately, that's reversed, and now the pages is just astronomical.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you say pages, you mean published, like
you know, page 17 of issue 422 of a certain comic book. So you mean published,
right? Yeah.
Published
so,
work,
so an
right.
actual piece of published artwork that, like, you know, you go to a comic book and you turn to a certain page in the comic. Well, that we're talking about the original artwork that was drawn for that particular page.
For that page. So you can collect both, though, right? I mean, you can be a guy that has a nice collection of pages, but you can also be a guy that just has
sketches and stuff.
Of sketches and stuff.
Sure, absolutely.
Or because of limited funds, do you find yourself gearing, like, focusing on one?
It's what you can afford. Now, my financial situation has changed a little bit. I have a family and children, and now you're a little more focused on what you're purchasing. So being a resident of Southern Ontario, there are two or three good shows that come up that are sources and opportunities for original artwork. So you look ahead, you see, oh, that, you know, Darwin Cook is a great example. He appears in Toronto at least once a year. I'm a huge Darwin Cook fan, so I try and focus and pick up something from him every year. Same with Michael Cho, a local Toronto artist. There are opportunities at these conventions to pick up original artwork, whether it's a page or whether it's an original sketch. It's really determined by what the artist is doing at the show. And a comic show really is the absolute best place to collect original art.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I know we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about, but just to kind of end this collecting point here, I'll also say that, you know, you were asking earlier, Walt, if sketches are a good way to get started. It's certainly the cheapest way to get started. If you want to start collecting original artwork, sketches are the easiest, cheapest way to get involved.
Right. Now, what I find fascinating with Scott, anyway, as a collector, talked a little bit about what you write on Comic Book Daily about the collected editions. So basically, graphic novels, early prints of graphic novels. I won't say it's odd, but it's kind of like the polar opposite. You collect the original artwork, and then you collect the reprints of the, you know, like it's the opposite end. It's like the very beginning and the very end. You don't necessarily collect the comic books, but you actually collect the reprints of the comics in collected form.
Well, I started collecting limited edition hardcovers in the late 80s because it was something unique, and Graffiti Designs was the big publisher at the time. They worked with Marvel, DC, and Marvel DC weren't producing hardcovers. It was strictly Graffiti Designs making these hardcovers, and within them, you were getting maybe a sketch or at least a signature plate. So they were signed limited edition hardcover comics. These were not available widely. It was really a real niche collecting.
Now, what kind of drew you to that? Because, I mean, really, like for a lot of people, even like myself, when those books started coming out, I sort of looked at those and thought, hey, you know what? I can spend $25 on getting that graphic novel in paperback form, or I can spend $75 or $80 or whatever it would happen to be, and I can get the signed edition hardcover. And I would think to myself, hey, you know what? I'd rather get three paperback graphic novels than one signed hardcover because really I just want to read the stories. Now, clearly I was wrong because what you were telling me earlier is that a lot of these hardcovers are worth a lot of money.
Right. The print runs were fairly small, and because they were signed limited editions. And then, above and beyond a signed limited edition, Graffiti also produced a lot of artist proof editions, which would be The Dark Knight, for example. There was 4,000 signed and numbered copies made. And then outside of that, there were about 100 copies where instead of a number, they were put AP for artist proof.
Right.
And these
right.
editions are worth quite a bit of money. And they just went up in value astronomically. Interesting. I started to collect because the Silver Snail received limited copies of the Dark Knight. And
right.
Silver Snail actually auctioned it off. And when I read that, I thought, wow, these comics or these books are so popular, they have to be auctioned. That seems like a great thing to collect.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
All right. Now, of these, can you point to a couple that are like the holy grails of the collecting, the community there? Are there some really tough ones that people are scouring for that can't find?
There are a couple hot items. It's interesting because there's not a lot of market for these. But there's a recent book, the Dave Stevens Rocketeer. I think we're all familiar with the character.
Yep.
IDW released a limited edition hardcover that reprints the original art pages in a hardcover.
Right, right. That was recently. It was like, right. like last year or something like
it
that.
It was released in San Diego.
Right.
And then there were limited editions. Again, it was allocated to stores. I was at my local comic book shop. It was able to get me a copy, and I'm very thankful for that. Now, to contrast that, there was a book, Captain Marvel and the Monster Society of Evil, was printed by a U.S. bookseller several years ago, and DC keeps promising to reprint it, but the material has never been reprinted. So that oversized hardcover is worth about $300 currently.
Wow.
But the absolute most rare I can think of is Graffiti Designs produced a hardcover Watchmen. It was never released as a signed and numbered edition.
Right.
But I've seen one copy that was signed by the creators, Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons.
Okay.
The process was started, and the creators decided they didn't want to do all the books. So
there's
a few floating around. So about 8 years ago, one sold on eBay for $800. I can only imagine what that would go for now.
For $800 for a reprint of a comic.
Right.
Really?
It has never resurfaced.
Interesting.
Yeah. And like you said, though, that would probably be low if another one surfaced. I mean, if it surfaced again.
I'd expect several $1,000s at least.
Wow. Right.
Wow. So you're still keeping it, right?
I'm watching for it, yeah.
Right. Well, that's cool. Now, so you've taken this love, this collecting strain anyway, and you write basically about it on Comic Book Daily. But lately, you've also been pretty prolific. You're reviewing graphic novels, too, on the site, right?
That's right. I've become more involved. I've assigned myself the title of technical editor at Comic Book Daily because, yeah, everybody needs a title. But I stopped collecting the weeklies, the floppies, whatever you want to call them, the regular comic books, and I only collect editions now, trade paperback or hardcover. And seeing as I'm reading, you know, one a day, I thought, well, after I read it, why don't I review it? So after I finish a volume, it goes up on a review on Comic Book Daily, and I hope people enjoy them.
Awesome. Well, you know what? We certainly hope that our listeners will go to comicbookdaily.com and post a comment on your website. Not your website, but on your blog, I guess. Is that what you call it? Do you even call it a blog? I don't know. What do you call it?
That's a good question.
I mean, because it's not in the blog section.
It's a column.
It's a column. Excellent. Okay. Post a comment on your column. And certainly, we'd be more than happy if any of our listeners would go to cbdcomicbookdaily.com and post a comment on our podcast. Thank you very much for joining us today, Scott. I hope you had a good time. We certainly enjoyed having you on the show. Walt, any last words?
Well, I just want to, you had a chance earlier. Again, I want to again congratulate CFMU on winning the Radio Station of the Year at the Hamilton Music Awards. Congrats to all of us, basically.
Perfect. That's great. Well, you know what? Go and support your local comic book retailers and have yourself a wonderful day. Thanks a lot for listening.